deep within the shadows of his secret headquarters, one of the most ruthless members of the Red Ribbon Army sculpts his body to deadly perfection. Slowly, with meticulous precision, he pushes towards the limit of his physical prowess, which seems as boundless as his lethal intellect. He is more than just a soldier for hire. He's ambitious. He is brutal. He is Colonel Silver, one of the driving forces behind General Red's acquisition of the 7 Dragon Balls. He will stop at nothing to reach his goal. Even now, he is no doubt hatching another fiendish scheme to secure the next ball and demolish anyone who gets in his way.
Welcome to Another Day, Another Adventure, a podcast dedicated to covering every Dragon Ball cartoon ever. I am your host, Colton, and with me, as always, is my good friend, Sakaki. How's it going, bud?
It's going great. Good to be warm at home.
Aren't you glad to not be in Minnesota? I'm just kidding. I've been to Minnesota. Some of my family lives up there, actually. But anyway, speaking of Minnesota, we actually have our first repeat guest, which is pretty cool because we are welcoming back to the show our good friend Lum Ramayasha. How's it going, buddy?
Yes, glad to be back. Deep within the shadows of my secret headquarters, one of the most ruthless members among our podcast, sculpting my body to deadly perfection.
Just drenched and dripping with sweat, glistening all over.
Pushing those weights until the machine breaks.
You have to give our fellow Manga Mavericks listeners all that fan service. At least a full minute of it.
just a full minute of just topless weightlifting.
Lord, I'm getting the vapors.
Bearing those muscles.
We'll definitely get to that. But yes, welcome back to the show, my good friend, as well as co-host of such shows as Manga Mavericks, hashtag Lum Squad, and we're just happy to have you on. And on this episode, we're going to be talking about episodes 32 to 34, which I guess technically is in the middle of the Red Ribbon Army arc. I honestly wasn't exactly sure how this was going to pan out last time because I hadn't seen these episodes because we're still kind of in the middle of a lot of anime original stuff, but we are kind of slowly veering into manga stuff again. The stuff that I'm more familiar with. So I'm okay, this is Red Ribbon Army. Good, good, good.
Yeah, 34 brings us back into the manga, adapting chapters 55 and 56.
Mm-hmm. Even before we get into that stuff, as we were kind of alluding to at the top of the show, I know Sakaki, you and you visited both Lum and V-Lord, our very good friends, in their hometown of Minnesota, and you had a fun vacation, and I'm very jealous.
Yes, a hometown of Minnesota. Minnesota is one big town.
okay, fair. Home state, I should have said. I know you guys had a lot of fun. And I'm glad that you got to take some vacay time. And I saw that you got to watch Resurrection F for the first time.
Yes, I did. It's funny because we were at Half Price Books. Was that
Half Price Books?
Yes,
yeah.
We were at Half Price Books, and I saw a DVD or a Blu-ray for it, and I was maybe I should get this. And then I discussed it with V-Lord and Lum, and they were we can watch it. We have it. Oh yeah, okay. And that's how that happened. So, yeah, we ended up going back home and watching it. I mean, first we started off with, the extras. Lum was busy with something, so V-Lord and I were just watching extras until they could join us. And, it's kind of, I've actually, they had a discussion between Nozawa and Skimmel. And, we watched a bit of that, and and we also watched a little bit of the dub recording of the scenes, and it was really funny to just see the expressions the actors were making, as they were acting out the scene or whatever, and, V-Lord and I were just like, wow, it just looks so weird when you see it this way, but...
Yeah, that red carpet, that interview stuff is from the red carpet premiere of Resurrection F in LA back when they first brought over the movie. So yeah, those are always fun extras to include whenever they put out a film Blu-ray and stuff. I always like to give those a watch. They didn't really ask, like, that many, like, super interesting questions. Like, they, of course, keep having to have it up. It's like, oh, this was, like, the most amazing movie ever. What is your opinion of why it's the most amazing movie? Stuff like that. But, you know, it's a lot of fun to see the actors banter. Especially, like, Schemmel was so enthusiastic about learning Nozawa's opinion. So their back-and-forth conversation was especially nice.
Yeah. I mean, they have a lot of respect for each other's, like, interpretation and portrayal of Goku, and it was really interesting to see that, because I, you know, obviously I follow, since I'm more into the sub, I follow a lot of, like, what Nozawa says, but I hadn't actually, you know, heard what Simmel thinks, so it was nice to hear that. For the movie itself, like, I know it's funny, because I kind of mentioned it to Colson on Discord, hey, I'm watching a movie, he was like, oh, that movie's some shit. And I was like, really?
One of your least favorite movies, apparently.
I do feel kind of bad, because, like, I was kind of being facetious, but also I don't know. I think Resurrection F is fine, but it is kind of lower on my list, I think, if I really had to think about it in terms of, like, what my favorite Dragon Ball movies are. And I felt bad because, like, I was just being facetious, but then I realized, like, oh, I'm probably, like, rating on Sakaki's Parade. I feel really bad, actually.
No, I mean, I figured that you were just kind of messing around a bit, and I was just like, really? I know when I was reading my reaction, I was like, God, I sound like he hurt my feelings. I was like, no, I'm not. I understand where you're coming from. I mean, I knew you were kidding, but yeah, it was. I mean, watching the movie through and everything, I will say, like, I like the premise. And I was a little bit surprised they played the titular song or the song that inspired it just like once.
Yeah, yeah.
Really early on, mm-hmm. And then that was it. But yeah, you know, it was nice seeing Frieza. I think Lum, when we were there, said it best, where it's like Frieza has a lot of charisma. So, like, that carried a lot of the movie. So,
for sure, yeah.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And, you know, I won't say so much I had a new appreciation for Frieza, but definitely, like, seeing this movie made him a little bit more interesting to me. Like,
mm-hmm.
Especially it being kind of a continuation of everything that happened to him in the TV series. I mean, as far as fights go and all of that, I thought it was fine. Like, I feel like it padded on a little bit much, because it definitely felt like it was the kind of movie where I was like, okay, Frieza's back. Like, how do we get the movie out of this? You can definitely feel that at some parts where it's just like, okay, this really should have been over by now. but
hey, it's just like Namek all over again.
God. Yeah, actually, that's not untrue. But yeah, no, there are definitely some parts where it's just like this should have been over, but it's still going. And but overall, I personally, and you know, it should be obvious from anybody listening to the show, I personally like it more when Dragon Ball is a little bit more. It isn't when it doesn't take itself as seriously. I enjoy Dragon Ball and Dragon Ball Z.
No, I'm
more.
In that same camp. Yeah.
So, mm-hmm. Like, I do appreciate the plot for just being kind of like it is a bit silly, and of course Frieza going to hell, and his hell basically being like Disneyland, basically. But, mm-hmm. Yeah, I found that funny, and I liked it that it's the bookmarks, bookends, that it's like, it begins and ends there and everything, and yeah, and the first look at, I think, was it Whis?
Whis, yeah.
Whis, yes, okay. Yeah, I knew of him, but I hadn't really seen too much of him before now, so it's not, obviously I need to get into the lore of how that all happened, but
I have to watch Battle of Gods.
Yeah, for sure.
We could have and probably should have watched that before watching Resurrection.
True.
We do have Battle of Gods, so we could have done both.
Yeah, we probably should have. But I mean, at some point, I'll get to it at some point. Because, like, I will admit, like, doing a show and watching Broly and now Resurrection F, I'm definitely more into Dragon Ball than I was maybe before the show and all of this. So I would be interested. I can't even make a snarky comment here because you're not wrong. But yeah,
I'm sorry, I just feel very validated right now.
But yeah, otherwise it was fine. I agree with Colton, it's like not the worst movie, and we were kind of discussing, like, you know, other movies that came before this one and what to watch and everything, and my memory is terrible if that isn't clear by now, but like, I was like, I don't think I've seen many Z movies. And then when we were talking through them, I'm like, oh, wait, no, I have seen a few. But these were back when they aired on Toonami, so this isn't a thing that I saw them recently. Like, like some of them were like movie premieres on Toonami. It wasn't like a thing where it's like, oh yeah, we repeated it a couple of years later. No, I saw that for when it started, when they first aired it. So I definitely, at some point, as much as like I know, especially Colton and I have said, talked about it, where like some of them aren't great, but I would like to go through all of the movies, like, because that's definitely, I probably have only seen maybe the first three or four, so I would like to see that. Now, Resurrection was fine. Like, I do, the animation wasn't quite as nice as Broly. That was the thing that definitely stuck out to me. Which, I mean, to be fair, I guess Toei was really kind of just leaning into the 3D CG. And I mean, maybe with Broly, they kind of got more used to it and were able to use it more, way more effectively. So it's going to be interesting to see what Super Hero looks like.
Yeah, I admit that even though I would prefer to watch Resurrection F over most of the Z movies, I do think it is probably one of the less good looking ones in terms of its aesthetic and character designs and the animation quality. Mm-hmm. Like, one thing I'll give, like, the older Z movies is that a lot of them have, like, really standout visual moments in the fights and stuff like that, even if it, like, is just kind of, like, mindless action for a lot of it. And what I appreciate about Resurrection, everyone makes up for that for me, is just that it has a lot of humor and some character interactions, and especially Frieza just makes the movie, and especially in the dub of Chris Ayres' performance, like, every line is just gold. And
oh, yeah, just for sure.
Makes it a delight to watch, even though the pacing can be slow because of how conversational it is.
Mm-hmm. No, yeah, see, that's my thing, is that, like, I think it's just my least favorite out of, like, the modern Dragon Ball movies, honestly.
Cause, yeah.
Like, the other ones, I think, are a lot better, personally, but you are right. It is still better than at least most of the old Z movies, though, for sure.
Mm. Yeah.
But, yeah, no, I'm glad that you still had a good time with it. And I'm definitely looking forward to, because I don't know if I don't remember the last time I rewatched that movie, honestly. It might have been closer to when around it came out. I didn't get to see it in theaters because I was out of town around then. So I couldn't see it until, like, I think later that year. But I think that's also part of the reason why I'm a little down on it, is because, like, I had to wait extra longer to see the movie on my own. And I feel like I might hype myself up a bit too much, maybe. I'm not sure. That might have something to do with it. But I don't know. I feel like if I... Because I know, like... I feel like the general consensus on this movie is that, like, a lot of people don't like it. At least that's from what I see. I could be wrong, but, like...
The opinion has definitely soured on the movie over time. When it came out, more people were more into it.
Yeah, yeah.
Generally. And then now, years later, a lot of people look back and then it's like, I didn't really... like this as much as I thought.
Yeah.
I would also say, I guess I don't like it as much as I did in the theater. The theater experience was great for this because it was a full theater and everyone was laughing along, especially at the dig at Yamcha being left out because he couldn't handle it and stuff like that.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, no, I still enjoy the movie. I've seen it many times because I got the Blu-ray and whatnot. Mm-hmm. But yeah.
Yeah, I think that's another sign that I don't think I liked this movie as much as I wanted to the first time I saw it, was that I eventually got Battle of Gods, you know, my own copy or whatever, and I still haven't gotten my own copy of Resurrection F, unfortunately. just kind of keeps slipping my mind. But, you know, I'm glad you at least enjoyed the movie. Again, it's not that bad, but also it's really hard to, like... I think it also doesn't help that we have stuff like Broly now where it's like, oh, it just makes the film look worse than it actually is, maybe.
Yeah.
In a lot of ways.
Yeah, like, I actually, even after, like, what Lum just says, maybe at this point I feel like maybe I should have watched Battle of Gods Resurrection as dead Broly. It's like, stepping backwards, it's just like... it's like watching them backwards is like, now I'm able to see, like, not that they're worse, but, like, it's definitely a step down, and it's not even,
yeah,
obviously it's because, you know, they're getting better with each one, like writing and all of that, but, like, yeah, I do feel like maybe at this point, I mean, not that we could help it, like, it was a thing where even I thought I was only going to watch the movies as we were getting to them. But it's just kind of like, okay, now, well, we're here and the movie's here, so why not watch it? So
you might as well, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, I don't know. Who knows? Maybe even because, I mean, shout out to our friends at We Got a Podcast. They recently did an episode on Battle of Gods, and they didn't really like it that much upon rewatch, which I don't know. I'm kind of wondering what, I mean, I think I'll still like Battle of Gods, but I am kind of wondering how I'm going to feel about it on a rewatch, again, compared to Broly now, I guess. I think I'll still like it more than Resurrection F, personally, though.
I think consensus is still generally positive on Battle of Gods, but I have also seen people who don't care for it, because the first half, I guess, is, like, mostly just comedy stuff, I guess, and people didn't care for that as much, I guess, so.
That's a shame, because I think I like Battle of Gods because it is mostly, like, a comedic sort of character-focused film, mostly.
I mean, especially because it was the first new piece of Dragon Ball animation in a long time when it came out.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the first big project, at least, beyond the 2008 special.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
It was a big deal. People were really excited about it. It introduced a new form and introduce new gods, new lore, so, and it tied into, you know, big events with the Song family, with, like, you know, Videl getting pregnant and stuff, and that being a point plot point in the movie. So, like, a lot of people, like, you know, were excited for that, and it was like a big celebration of Dragon Ball. It was fun to just see these characters all interact and have little moments. So I mean, I think that was a large part of, like, why it felt so special when it originally came out. And I still think that a lot of the movie is still fun to watch, even in the age of, like, modern Dragon Ball, where we have a lot of content. The story is now, like, continuing consistently through the manga, if not the anime. So, yeah, I mean, I think it's still a fun movie. And I still think that the fight between Goku and Beerus, especially when the insert song kicks in, is like one of my favorite moments in the animated Dragon Ball canon, just as a whole. Because it is a really great scene. And every time I watch it, it still, like, gives me chills and, like, excites me.
That is a good fight, though I will admit, when I watch the dub in particular, it is really hard for me to not laugh at Sean Schemmel's performance when Goku's breaking out of the ground, because of the way, like, Goku's animated in that particular moment, and he has to match the lip flap, so it kind of comes off, the performance kind of comes off a little weird, but that's not really his fault. He's just kind of trying to match the animation, but it still makes me laugh the whole, "I will not let you destroy my world!" it makes me laugh every time. But no, I do agree that fight, though, is still pretty good. It's probably one of the best parts of the movie. But we should probably move on to the actual episodes. I'm very excited to get to these movies. Let's not think about how long it'll take. let's start by obviously Lemmy, our repeat guest, our first repeat guest, so we don't have to ask you what our Dragon Ball origins are for the first time in a few episodes. So I will start off the conversation by asking, because I know I asked you to be on for these episodes because one of these episodes was like within your rotation of, like, which episodes you would watch of this show, like, on the Funimation channel. And was it episode 32 or is it a later one?
So I believe Funimation channel went up to episode 33 ultimately. Originally, they only played through 28. And then later they added more episodes into the early Red Ribbon. But because they got stuck in a rotation where they would repeat every five episodes on a 3, 8, 13, 18 cycle, whatnot, and it just would stay like that after a certain while and didn't, like, repeat back, unlike in the early rotation where, because, you know, because of the fact that it was playing, you know, 5 days a week, but there wasn't, like, an even number of episodes. The episodes that would air on which days would shift. But after a certain while, like, the episodes would stay consistent on when they would air. So, yeah, I think that they ultimately went up to 33 because I never saw the Muscle Tower stuff past that. So I only saw Silver stuff. But actually, I requested to be on these episodes because I really do like these Colonel Silver episodes a lot. And even before watching them, like, Funimation channel, like, the VHS tapes of these episodes were among the first Dragon Ball tapes that I ever got from the library and watched.
Oh, wow.
After getting into Dragon Ball in early 2005 and just seeking out the series piecemeal, like, the tapes of these episodes were among the first tapes of original Dragon Ball, among the first episodes of original Dragon Ball I ever watched. And I really liked them. I really liked them as a introduction into the Red Ribbon Army and kind of how it reframes the Red Ribbon Army. Because in the manga, we just get introduced to them, of course. Like, Goku stumbles upon them, and he just stumbles upon, like, Silver and two goons. And it escalates from there, but we don't, like, get a super sense of the scale and the threat of the army initially. But in the anime, we start off seeing an entire town be, like, invaded and ransacked by the Silver leading an army, a platoon of tanks. He messes up, like, a civilian's house. He shoots the guy dead. He has this big chase fight with Pilaf and his flying fortress. He bans like a platoon of planes, and he has all these soldiers, and so you get more of a sense of, like, okay, this army, like, is generally a big threat, and they are, like, harassing and horrifying, like, everyone they come across. They're generally really bad dudes. And I like how the anime reframes Colonel Silver, because in the manga, he is just like a schlub. Like, he's confident in his strength, but we really don't know that much about him when we, like, get introduced, and we don't know actually how, like, how strong he is. Like, he boasts that, oh, you shouldn't underestimate me, but then, you know, Goku beats him in 2 pages. Here in the anime, though, we have several episodes of build up showing that he is cold and ruthless, and he generally is, like, a very strong person, because, you know, as we get into episode 33, like, that opens with him, like, training and breaking his weight machine, and then he beats up a bunch of professional boxers, including Stree, at the same time. And yeah, we get a sense that, okay, this guy is dangerous. Like, we know that he is ruthless, he's not afraid to kill, and we've seen him do really horrible things. So it's really cathartic when Goku, of course he beats him as easily as in the manga, but because of all the build-up, it feels more cathartic to see Silver get knocked down a peg, because we've seen him do a bunch of horrible things, and we know that he is generally, like, a scary dude. And I love the fight, or rather, like, how Goku completely no-sells Silver, just with a few simple blows. Like, the shot of Goku just evading Silver's punches, which is not in the manga, just him, like, walking forward and just effortlessly dodging Silver's punches as he's trying to punch him, like, without even looking back at him, is a shot that has always stuck with me. I've always remembered. It's really cool. And yeah, like, I like how the anime just reframes his entire beginning and introduction to the Red Ribbon Army as characters. I like how it expands on the characters Silver Surfer, and I almost think they do it too well, because I feel like, man, I wish Silver had continued on or had even more of a resolution than he does here in the anime. But I still think that I like also how they set up Commander Red as, like, cruel and ruthless in the way he deals with Silver. Because, like, also in the manga, Commander Red, when we get introduced to him, we already know he's kind of, like, a comedic character not to be taken very seriously. But here in the anime, you know, they very much make him a James Bond villain. Like, directly with the way they frame his shots of only seeing him from the neck down, torso, stroking his pet monster cat, he is a parody of a Bond villain. Explicitly Goldfinger.
Okay.
And, you know, I like that approach and characterization, and the fact that he continues to make, like, veiled threats, or, like, direct threats of, like, if you don't succeed, you are going to be punished, which he makes good on in, like, the implied fate of Colonel Silver, which is also referenced, like, in a joking way in the manga, but in here, it's, like, a more serious scene that is also incredibly memorable, of Silver just walking out the door, and then you're just left to wonder, but, you know, with the soldiers going after him, the implication is, like, he just walks off with dignity, but he's going to be put to death anyway. So it's just a combination of really interesting scenes that set up the army as a threatening organization that just really struck me as cool, and, like, super serious. It really struck me as a kid, and I still find really enjoyable now because of how different the characterization is from the manga. And yeah, I really appreciate it.
Mm-hmm. No, I am. I know we're kind of jumping it all over the place, but it's fine. I guess to kind of circle back to, yeah, Silver's Fate, I was kind of surprised to see that in both like anime and manga, he just kind of leaves to never be seen again. I mean, I guess we can assume they eventually executed him, maybe, or maybe he got out.
In the manga, all that's said is like Commander Red takes the phone call and he hears about what happened to the Dragon Ball from Silver, and he says, "You idiot, you're sentenced to death." And that's the end of that. We don't know if Silver is actually dead. And the way the scene plays out, it's played like comedically. Like, yeah. Red gets mad at him and he's like, "Oh, you go die, you. You suck." But in the anime, it's like this like serious scene of like, you know, Silver is like telling him, "Why? I thought you valued my strength. Please give me another chance." And Commander Red is saying, "No, you know what happens. There are no second chances in the army." And then like he's starting to be led away, but like he just clings to that last bit of dignity he has and walks just out the door by himself and the soldiers go. That just really struck me. It's like, the fate is implied because, you know, we don't hear the gunshots. We don't know, you know, if the soldiers succeeded killing him. But the implication is there that, like, Silver walks off knowing that he is a dead man walking. But he just clings to just that little bit of dignity, you know, to go off on his own terms. And I like that a lot. It was just very interesting. And to me, it's like, I really like how the anime just fleshes out. It adds a little bit of extra layer to this character that really, again, was just pretty much like a one-note antagonist in the manga that just appeared in two chapters. His only characterization was that he was proud of his own strength and got beaten easily, and that's it. But like just little scenes like that and his interactions with Red and his interactions with other characters just add a lot to make him a really interesting character that stuck with me and made these episodes stick with me just for so many years, even though a lot of this material is like anime original enhanced stuff.
Mm-hmm. I will admit, I didn't get a chance to say it at the top, but admittedly, I have one or two issues with some of these episodes that we'll probably get to in a bit, but I can't say I disagree with your opinion on how Red is handled in the anime, because I will at least say that, like, you know, I mean, I think I remember when I first tried to watch the show, and I think either around here, like, right, like, in the batch of episodes we covered before, was around the point where I just kind of gave up on the anime for whatever reason, because I wasn't really in the mood to see all of the, like, quote-unquote filler stuff, you know, as we would like to call it, anime original, whatever. And, you know, when I looked into it more and saw, like, oh, they're doing more with Red. And, you know, when I reviewed the manga and I was like, why are they doing more with Red? He gets like clowned so easily. But I agree that, like, upon, you know, actually watching these episodes, I do like that we get to spend more time with Red. It also, if not
do
for the fact
Silver
that...
Or
see, okay, see, this is... This, okay, yeah, we need to address
see,
this.
Okay, because his hair, like, he's got the red hair going on, and
that's what messes me up!
Yeah, that's seriously. What I can't...
Yeah.
See, I knew that was gonna happen. I'm surprised that didn't happen last episode. I was so good about it, too. Oh, I hate it. Okay, Silver, yes. The thing that I do like about Silver is that, you know, we do get to see more of him. We get to kind of flesh him out as a character a lot more than he ever was in the manga. And, you know, like you said, he still gets clowned on pretty hard. But, like, the fact that we got that much buildup to him being clowned on, like you said, makes it that much better. It honestly makes it even funnier that he gets clowned on so hard.
No, especially in the dub, the way they write his dialogue and they write scenes with his interactions with Red, like, also just build up the intrigue and hype to what a badass it is. And in particular, the opening narration of episode 33 in the dub is just amazing. So I think I mentioned on the last time I was on, but the dub will often just extend narration or add narration to like the opening parts of episodes, mainly the recaps, where in the original show they're just let the footage play and there isn't that much that is said. But you know, in the opening episode 33 in the original, it's just like the minute of Silver doing weights, you know, just a minute of him just watching him push his weights. But in the dub, they add narration from Bryce Armstrong, who just so sells just how badass and how much of a big deal Colonel Silver is. And I just want to read the entire narration, and please also put in the audio clip of it.
I definitely will,
just saying it, because it's amazing, just the writing of this. Deep within the shadows of his secret headquarters, one of the most ruthless members of the Red Ribbon Army sculpts his body to deadly perfection. Slowly, with meticulous precision, he pushes towards the limit of his physical prowess, which seems as boundless as his lethal intellect. He is more than just a soldier for hire. He is ambitious. He is brutal. He is Colonel Silver, one of the driving forces behind General Red's acquisition of the 7 Dragon Balls. He will stop at nothing to reach his goal. Even now, he is no doubt hatching another fiendish scheme to secure the next ball and demolish anyone who gets in his way. And right at that moment is the moment where Silver breaks the machine. It's just pitch perfect timing for that. Oh, just that narration. That hype speech for Colonel Silver also has just always stuck with me. That opening of that episode with that narration, and then the following scene of him beating all the boxers and then meeting General Red. Like, all of that really stuck with me. It really sells the character and just, again, makes him so memorable in a way that, you know, again, he was in the manga, but I appreciate the anime doing.
Well, I definitely know what I'm putting at the beginning of the episode before the opening music.
Absolutely.
Oh, man.
The only other comment I will make before we go into the proper recap of this is that I know one criticism I've heard about characterizing Silver this way and making him this much of a presence is that in the manga, there's more of a clear progression of, like, Goku fighting up the ranks of the Red Ribbon Army and the threat escalating.
Yeah.
Whereas with Silver, you know, having, like, so much military might behind his control right at the start, you know, it feels like he eclipses White's forces in the next arc, and it feels like he's on par, or if not, has even more power at his disposal than General Blue. So I can understand the criticism from the sense of, like, the progression of the enemies, the Red Ribbon Army, but I still think it works because with White, he has, like, more threatening subordinates.
Yeah.
And then Blue himself is more of a threatening person that can be a match to Goku. So I think it all works out, but I can understand that criticism. I've heard from people who prefer how the manga handles the progression of enemies.
You know, actually, I didn't even really think about it like that, but I think you're totally right, and I can totally see that, but I'm kind of fine either way. Like I said, the fact that we get so much buildup with Silver, again, like I said earlier, does make his clowning, like, that much funnier to me, honestly. I think it enhances that punchline almost, you know?
Yeah. I mean, again, that shot of him just punching Goku and him just effortlessly down is just such a great moment. Probably one of my favorite scenes in the Dragon Ball anime.
Mm-hmm. See, that's interesting. I you might have mentioned it to me, and I just don't remember. I didn't know you watched these on tape as a kid. That's really cool though.
Yeah. One of my earliest tapes that I got from the library.
So did that tape, like, have all three of these episodes on there?
I do believe it was episodes 29 to 31 on one tape and 32 to 34 on the other tape. And I think the tape with 32 to 34 was indeed actually the first of those tapes I got.
Okay. That's, well, hey, it happened to work out.
Yes. Wow. Pretty serendipitous. Actually,
I did not plan that ahead of time. That's actually pretty cool. But I mean, we can go into the sort of proper recap here. We don't have to go over literally everything, but, like, well, we can actually properly start with episode 32. And I will say my first thought on this episode, because I think when we recorded last time with Kendra, you know, we definitely had our thoughts on episode 29 in particular and how we didn't really care for the ending of that episode, unfortunately.
Yeah.
That kind of, like, soured my first impression of, like the actual, like, fully anime original episodes, I think, at first. But then I got kind of more into 30 and 31 because it looked like it was kind of building up like an actual story. And, you know, when we got to that cliffhanger where it's like, oh, man, yeah, Silver is, like, raiding this town. And now he has to chase after Pilaf, who has the Dragon Ball they're trying to hunt for. Like, I thought that actually did a pretty good job of getting me excited. Like, oh, I wonder what's going to happen afterwards. I wish I could watch the next episode sooner. And then we get to episode 32. And I'm not saying, like, you know, I like how it ended. I guess I weirdly thought this was going to go on for a little longer. I wasn't expecting, like, you know, the whole chase of Pilaf and gang to end, like, in episode 32 specifically. I kind of thought it was gonna, like, keep going up until we got to, I guess, Silver's, like, canon manga introduction. So that kind of surprised me personally.
I think it was a good length for this, like, mini arc introduction to the Red Ribbon. And I again, having Pilaf at the start of this to compare and contrast, like, the original antagonistic force from the first arc, who were these, like, goofy villains, to still, you know, ended up being a threat to our heroes by the end, but, you know, they were characters you would take much less serious, and they were just much less of a threat to the world compared to the Red Ribbon Army. I like contrasting the Pilaf gang to the Red Ribbon Army, and I also think it's just an amazing bookend it creates between, you know, the start of this arc involving the Pilaf gang and the end of the arc involving the Pilaf gang, when it is revealed that they have the final Dragon Ball at the end of the Fortune Teller Baba conflict. And, you know, it's amazing that the, you know, that it just worked out like that. Because, like, the anime had no idea that Toriyama would bring the characters back into manga.
Yeah,
in
fact,
I wonder if Toriyama is inspired to bring the characters back because of the anime including them here. Because one thing I'll also note about these episodes is that episode 33 is the last episode that aired before the end of the Red Ribbon Army arc in the manga.
Oh, okay.
Like, the chapter where Goku beat the army, the chapter 96, The Fall of the Red Ribbon Army, was published, like, the same week as episode 36. So, kind of an amazing coincidence. The anime started the canon material, the Red Ribbon Army arc, just as the arc ended in the manga. So, it was kind of a interesting coincidence there that they managed to time it that way. But yeah, no, again, I really appreciate the Pilaf gang's vision in here, but not just because, you know, I love the Pilaf game, but also, you know, it ended up really working out in terms of, like, the overall story. So, like, when they come back at the end of the Baba stuff, you're like, oh yeah, they were also looking for the Dragon Balls. And now there's an extra reason you can understand why they created the special box to hide the Dragon Ball in, so, like, no one could track the electromagnetic signal, because they knew it was beyond, like, the potential of Goku being out there looking for them. Like, they had this run into the Red Ribbon Army. So yeah, I like that a lot, how it worked out like that.
No, that's interesting. I had no idea, like, how wide the gap was between where the anime was at and where the manga was running, you know, especially since, like, you know, these are mostly anime original episodes, you know, still kind of leading into the next arc. Like, I was genuinely wondering, like, how far that gap was, especially, I have my thoughts on episode 33 in particular, but we'll save those when we get to it. Episode 32, I mean, I guess, not like a whole lot happens. Like, Goku and Chi-Chi eventually, like, get back to the village just in time to, like, take care of the members of the army that are there. And the first thing I thought, because obviously, like, they have access to, like, capsules and stuff, I kind of wonder how Bulma and her family would feel, like, knowing that their technology that they created is being used by the Red Ribbon Army, an obviously evil organization. Maybe they don't actually care, I don't know.
Well, I can't imagine they would be personally happy about it, but considering it's a commercial product, they can't really control, like, who purchases it and for what ends they use it.
That's fair, yeah.
So, it's like, you know, a tool as ubiquitous as phones, as computers. Like, you know, at this point, it's just such an everyday commodity and resource for people that, you know, of course, bad people are also going to use it because everyone has access and can use this type of technology.
Yeah, I guess it wouldn't be the same as, like, say, like, Tony Stark finding out that his technology is being used by terrorists or whatever. It's not totally the same thing or whatever, you know?
Yeah, it's not, like, specific super private technology like that.
Mm-hmm.
But I really like that the moment where, you know, they fight the soldiers terrorizing the village, because like Chi-Chi just manages to beat a bunch of them with her like helmet lasers.
Yeah.
And like not just so accidentally, like while doing her thing of like kind of cowering and crying, is but still like just managing to take out her opponent, just like when she like decapitated the dinosaur chasing her when we first saw her. So I thought that was pretty funny.
I want to say that like that's used as like her ultimate special attack in Tenkaichi 3. I might be remembering that wrong.
Oh, but that'd be cool. That's nice.
That's awesome.
Where it's her like panicking and yelling and like yelling for Goku, but like using all of her using her like Ultraman head blade thing and her lasers. I want to say that's her ultimate attack. I'd have to like go back and check, but it looked familiar to me.
Yeah, that's fun. The only other thing I want to bring up with Chi-Chi in these episodes, and this more has to do, I guess, with the previous episode where Goku and Chi-Chi reunited, is that I believe this is the time frame that is referenced in Dragon Ball Z episode 202, when like Chi-Chi is telling Gohan about the story of her and Goku's first date.
Oh, wow.
Because the scenery of like where they meet, like in the field by a lake, is very similar to the flashback in that episode.
Huh.
And obviously we don't see the scene that is in that episode that Chi-Chi's recalling of like them ultimately getting to a fight because of misunderstanding of like what Chi-Chi wanted to do, Goku misunderstanding what Chi-Chi like wanted to do in terms of what a date was. But like, I think that this is the time frame that is being referred to when she is reflecting on their first date. So I just thought it was a nice thing to bring up, because I mean, as far as the rest of the show goes, I can't think of another time their paths cross in that way or that location in the show. So, yeah.
That's interesting. I'll definitely have to keep that in mind when we eventually get to those episodes.
Right.
Oh, boy. One of my favorite little details around that point, too, is around the point where Goku starts fighting them. I mean, first off, I sent Sakaki a screen cap of this. There was a shot where, like, one of the army members is about to shoot Goku, and the frame was, like, positioned so that I thought for a second all their guns had, like, red ribbons on them, but oh, it turned right. out that they're on their arm. Yeah.
On their arm. Yeah, yeah.
I was going to laugh so hard if all their guns had ribbons on them. That I would have loved that personally. But also, I really love the like bat, like 60s Batman style sound effect that they do for one hit, where like they just use the word gun for a second. It's not even like full capitalization, just G under capitalized UN, just gun. Not gun, gun.
Just a description of the weapon. That's so great.
Yeah, it weirdly didn't have as much impact as you would think it should, actually. Very interesting choice there. Yeah, but all that stuff is pretty good, and I also, I'm still not, I said this last episode, but I'm still not over how Pilaf just has this flying fortress. I want to know where he got it.
Yeah, very Death Star-esque flying fortress. It's very amazing. And I like the kind of air fight that he has with Silver.
Yeah, that was
and
cool.
The fact that he actually manages to hide the fortress in the clouds and like get one over on Silver and shoot him down. I thought that was a nice win for Pilaf there. And then having the strategy of like hiding the fortress under the sand too. Like, if he just had a little more patience and didn't like try and shoot at Goku, he probably could have, you know, Silver was suspicious, but like by kind of exposing, you know, the guns and trying to shoot Goku, like he kind of gave himself away. So, you know, it's a good strategy though. Like genuinely, Pilaf came up with some good strategies in this battle with Silver.
I really dug the animation for 32 and 33. With like the air fights looked really sick for something that is as old as this show is. I mean, I get the idea that like they, and looking through the animators and everything like that, it wasn't like they pulled out anybody special. Like, as far, I did do a little research on them. We had a couple of Dragon Ball vets, which was nice to see. But otherwise, yeah, I just really love the way that the air battles are depicted and everything like that. Even Goku getting blown away was like really well drawn. Yeah, that's a shot that stuck with me. Like, no matter how many times I watch this show, that's always stuck with me. Just the way that that's done with the color, the sound, and Goku being blown away and everything.
Yeah, that was a huge-ass explosion.
Yeah. And one thing I also really liked was just how the whole, like, chase ended. like, it's a narration, you know, they're talking about the end of the episode and all of that, and then it's like, you know, Silver comes out and he just has his hand out, give me the ball. I just like that it's not that, like, it's not like this huge confrontation yelling back and forth. It's just like Silver's like, that's enough, you've had your fun, give it.
Yeah, no. Pilaf thinks that they've gotten away because they're being hidden in the smoke, but, you know, Silver and his men are just waiting for them, yes, at the bottom, and so Pilaf has no other choice but just to hand over the ball. And it's just miraculous, honestly, that they were able to get away with their lives after all that.
Yeah, I look, if this were a different show, Silver would have just shot them dead or taken them prisoner at the very least. I'm surprised they let him go scot-free, honestly.
Yeah. I mean, obviously the reason is because the anime knew they probably shouldn't kill off Pilaf.
That'd be really funny if they did, though.
Yeah, they'd have to figure out a way to explain him coming back at the end of the boss stuff.
Like, Shu brought me back with the Dragon Balls or something. I don't know. It's Resurrection P! Resurrection P!
It's a good thing that Silver doesn't check his work. Yeah.
They just have to make him a cyborg. Like,
oh, that'd be so... Okay, you know... I was kind of joking, but I actually do kind of want Resurrection P. Yeah. That'd be a great, like, April Fool's joke. Oh, fuck. I want it so bad.
Beyond the dogfight, beyond the aerial dogfight, I also like the chase inside of Pilaf's fortress with Goku, like, running through, like, the maze after Pilaf and, like, you know, Pilaf setting all these, like, walls down to block his path and then Goku just running through them.
Yes!
And I love the music thing of da 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 da. That's one of my favorite music things. It's used really well.
Yeah, that was really good. This episode had a lot of music I really liked. I was going to mention earlier during Silver and Pilaf's dogfight. I'm not saying this piece of music is bad by any means, but it did weirdly take me out of the scene a little bit when I started hearing blam 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 blam, like this, like, banjo sounding music.
Yeah, like that I did have some issues with, like, some of the music choices in these episodes, but, like, I also get the idea that, like, that was one of them. I just feel like there were a lot of times where the music kind of took me out of the, like, what was going on screen, and I kind of get that, like, the soundtrack isn't quite as expansive now, so, because that's happened, like, before, too, with other scenes, where it's like, oh, they're playing this really comedic music when it's, like, we're supposed to be taking this scene seriously, so...
Yeah,
but, like, it was nothing that was, like, so bad that I'm like, well, this episode's ruined.
No, but I will say, when I start hearing... I started like bopping my head because it's like, that's one of my favorite pieces of music from the show. It's so good. Oh, shit. A lot of the stuff, like, yeah, I wasn't entirely sure at first, like, because obviously we have that sort of mystery where it's like they're trying to find the Dragon Ball and they can't find it. And then it turns out it's like, oh, it's under... It's basically in Pilaf's fortress, but you don't know at the time, like, oh, it's just under the sand. And at first I'm just like, how did he do that? How did he get under sand? But you see that he does, like, have a carrier that I guess, like, props up and opens up from the ground. I guess, you know, that makes sense. I'm fine with that. He does capture, like, a few soldiers, and
yeah,
they're alive at first, but then, like, when you see, like, you know, Silver and everybody start, like, blasting away at their fortress from underground, and you see a shot of all those soldiers just, like, dead, like, fit in the room filled with smoke. I have to imagine those soldiers are definitely dead, for sure.
Yeah, I think that's another good, like, small way to communicate just Silver's ruthlessness, is that he is not afraid to get rid of his own men or kill them if it means, like, achieving his goal and taking down his enemy. So...
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that very much reflects the general philosophy of the Red Ribbon as, like, this very callous organization. It's like, you're not useful, you're out.
Mm-hmm, for sure. Mm-hmm. I'm kind of okay with moving on to 33, unless you guys have anything you want to say about 33 real quick.
The only other point I want to mention is that I like, you know, they talk with the Ox King later after he breaks out his net and they're just trying to talk to him and see, like, you know, what the situation is and, like, go grab some. You know who these guys are attacking were? And Onsen King is like, oh, I don't really know. But, you know, I've made a lot of enemies, so I can't really complain that people want to come and attack me again.
He knows what's up.
It's to be expected.
Yeah.
And I just thought that was, like, a funny like, the Ox King is, like, repentant, but, like, and he knows he has enemies and he doesn't begrudge anyone who's, like, coming out for revenge.
He knows that his past is going to catch up with him one day.
Yeah. I like that was just kind of throwing, like, yeah, they were kind of assholes, but I was a bigger one at one point, so.
Life literally killed people. He who casts the first stone. No, I don't know.
Stop. Not with the Macho Man Randy Savage voices.
Well, brother, I had it coming. Oh, man. Yeah, 32 I thought was pretty good, though. I liked it as an end to, like, I guess, the like, peel-off portion of this Silver arc. I thought it ended pretty well. 33 I have less positive opinions on. Like, I'm just going to get this out of the way. 33 I don't necessarily think is, like, a bad episode, but it really kind of feels like, A, not a lot happens, and B, this feels like they just kind of needed another episode, and they didn't really know what to do with it or, like, what the focus should be. Because, like, at first we get a lot of focus on, like, you know, Goku hanging out with these monkeys or whatever, which is kind of cute. And then eventually we just get, like, this weird bit where, you know, not that I mind, you know, going back to the Kame House, because I like Krillin and Roshi and Launch. I like those characters. So it was actually kind of a nice surprise to see them again. But then we, like, get this, like, weird thing where, like, they're just kind of hanging out. And then Roshi starts telling Krillin and Launch about the legend of the Dragon Balls, which definitely is not a thing that's in the manga, is definitely created for the anime, which I'm pretty sure they will never refer to ever again. So it's just kind of like, well, that's kind of a nice, it was a time waster, basically. I just thought that was kind of weird.
Yeah, like, it's so strange because, like, the title of this episode would lead you to believe that it's going to explore more about this Dragon Ball legend, the myth of where the Dragon Balls came from. But that actual scene of Roshi telling that to Krillin is just a few minutes long, and there isn't that much to it. Basically, there was one big Dragon Ball at one time. No one really knows where it came from, but, like, they say it was created by the gods. It was worshipped by this village who put in, like, this mount of this giant dragon who was, like, his protector. Like, thieves tried to take it, and then it angered the gods, and so they split into seven orbs, and that's why there are seven Dragon Balls. And then, like, Roshi goes on to say, oh, then throughout history, like, people have used it to gain power and stuff like that. And then the dub adds even more stuff to that. It's like, oh, it caused a lot of suffering because people use it for their own selfish purposes. But then in the legend, there's will be one day, it is said that there's going to be someone who will, you know, be a hero who will use the Dragon Balls for goodness and bring peace and unity to the world once more. So they just added a bunch of more fluff there. But there's still, like, not much to it.
No,
it really
yeah.
is, like, the anime felt like, we don't have enough to fill out this episode. We have this idea of what could be, like, an interesting, like, idea for the original of the Dragon Balls. And then Toriyama has not, you know, he has not explained this in the manga, and they probably consulted him and says, I don't really have an idea, you can do whatever. And so they just went for it. But, yeah, it's like, They just didn't come up with that interesting a story that they could flesh out into a full episode, and then the stuff around it thematically doesn't really relate to the Dragon Ball legend, so it's like, it just stands out. So yeah, I mean, you can also, like, dismiss it, you know, whatever, you know, continuity problem there is, like, oh, obviously we know this isn't how the Dragon Balls were actually created, because this is just, like, a legend, a folk story that was passed down. No one really knows the true origins. And so that's fine. It works out that this doesn't truly contradict anything that comes later, because it was never meant to be, like, the factual canonical explanation. But that also just makes it feel like kind of a time waster. Not even the visuals are, like, that interesting to just...
The insert song was good.
This scene.
That's the one thing I guess.
The insert song, like, all the insert song pretty much removed in the dub. So, you know, it's just narration there. But I liked the use of Dragon Ball Legend as an insert song in the original. It is nice to listen. I always like when the insert songs are used in the show. But yeah, I mean, I think the most interesting thing about that scene with Roshi telling that story is just the giant bowl of shaved ice they're eating. It's just like, but the Goku's not there with you anymore, guys. I don't think you're going to be able to finish all that. I think it's just all going to melt. Krillin does not seem very hungry. So, you know, yeah.
What's funny is, like, while he's explaining it, the bowl, like, the amount of shaved ice in the bowl is, like, he's slowly working his way through it because it's, like, less in each scene. So that's that. I found that pretty interesting. But yeah, no, I agree with you guys. Like, the only thing I really took away from that scene is the insert theme, which was, you know, immaculately placed. But I was wondering for a long time if that was, because I admit I'm not as familiar with the manga, but I was wondering, is this really, it didn't feel like the kind of thing that Toriyama would do.
It felt kind of bland compared to anything like Toriyama would write, honestly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's what I was thinking. I was just like, this, and plus I kind of get, I mean, I feel like if this were canonical, that it'd be discussed more, but like, I've never heard it outside this episode. So that was something I wanted to ask. It's like, is this like canonical? And now I know it isn't.
I'm pretty sure they do this same thing like later on in Z, when I think it's during the Saiyan saga where like King Kai starts explaining like the Saiyans to Goku and like their war with another alien race. I remember them doing like the same thing later on. I don't remember the details outside of that though. This is something they've done multiple times.
Yeah, that also happens in DBZ where like they explain, oh, how did Planet Vegeta how was it destroyed? And the explanation was, oh, the god of Planet Vegeta was so upset at the Saiyans that he created the meteor that destroyed them. And then, like, you have to, like, justify that as, oh, King Kai just lied to Goku because he doesn't want to know, let him know about Frieza. But that's more of, like, a one where you gotta, because where you know that King Kai knows about Frieza, so you have to just assume, oh, he's just lying to Goku. Because they don't acknowledge it or bring it up again. Goku's like, wait a minute, you told me that the god of Black Vegeta destroyed it. King Kai has to explain that.
It's a good thing Goku wouldn't remember it anyway.
But the Tuffles are canon, and of course, or like at least they're anime canon, because
they'll
be referenced again and stuff like that. So there's that comes out of it. So at least that story ends up having a lingering legacy in the franchise, as opposed to this, which is more forgettable and dismissible.
I guess that's true.
For me, my favorite parts of this episode, again, as mentioned before, are just everything involving Colonel Silver and building him up. And the scene with Commander Red, where he opens the door and, like, Red sicked his cat on him, and he just, like, manages to evade him, and it just scratches his cheek. And, like, you know, Red commends him for his reflexes. Like, that's a good scene. And, like, him telling Silver that, you know, I won't accept any failure. I need those balls and get rid of anyone who gets in our way. He throws a knife at Silver and it just misses the top of his head and it hits a statue behind him and like right in the forehead and it cracks.
Yeah,
that was great. And I love in the dub for this episode, like, spices up a few lines in a fun way. Like, so I, when, like, Silver has evaded Red's cat, like, and Red is, like, complimenting him. He also mentions that the last person to walk through that door lost an eye. Needless to say, he's no longer with us. So I just like that implication that he put that person to death because he failed to evade the cat. And just showing just how, again, ruthless he is and how unforgiving he is of any, like, weakness or failure of any kind from his men. Which is a good, like, setup for, you know, him getting rid of Silver, who got him a Dragon Ball in the anime. And, like, in the manga, you know, Silver did not deliver Red any Dragon Balls. Like, he's under pressure because Brown Squad managed to find a ball, and he's still looking. But, like, here we see that, oh, Silver, you know, he found Red, like, his first ball or one of his first balls, and he's still so unforgiving of him and puts him to death just because he let Goku get away with one of them. So, yeah, it's just, again, I like that additional bit of the characterization of his ruthlessness.
Mm-hmm. One thing I do want to say about Red while we're on the subject, it kind of skipping ahead a little bit, but like, you know, we were kind of talking earlier about like the differences between how the anime and the manga kind of treat him as an antagonist. In the manga, he's definitely a little more comedic, where, like you were saying, here in the anime, he's meant to be taken a bit more seriously, especially when, like, they take, like, multiple episodes before, like, we even reveal, like, what he fully looks like at all, which makes him even more menacing. I did notice that in the manga, because they do have to kind of rejigger some things a little bit in 33, just because of the way the anime plays out, but I did notice that in the anime they eventually did cut a scene where like we get this little bit with Red and Black where they're having a conversation, and that scene ends with Red being like, hey, can you not stand next to me, like you're making me look tiny.
They cut the short joke, the joke of like Red being upset at being emasculated because he's short, especially when standing next to the rather tall staff officer Black, which in some ways it's like a little bit of a loss to lose that set off of what is Red's defining motivation for collecting the balls, but that is like brought up eventually in the anime and later scenes.
Oh, that's interesting. I was actually gonna say I actually kind of like that change because like I mean
I was gonna say
I'm watching the anime for the first time, so I don't really know like when it gets brought up before the big reveal, but at first I thought like, oh, this is actually like not a bad change because it's like, well, we're trying to make Red look intimidating anyway. It would be like, it makes sense that like you want to kind of like save that sort of reveal for like the very end of the arc. But if it comes up eventually before then whatever. But I thought that change made sense for what they were going with, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, what I appreciate is that in both anime and manga, Red has a temper, right? He has a short fuse. But the difference in characterization is that in the manga, Red loses his cool really easily. Like, he immediately gets upset and he freaks out and he gets angry. In the anime, though, he's very much more strict and stern and threatening. And so, like, where he, I think a huge change is comes in the next episode when the fact of his reaction to hearing that Goku stole the ball and Silver was defeated. Because in the manga, he is the one who answers the phone call from Silver, and he freaks out of like, what? You lost the ball? You idiot. In the anime, Staff Officer Black is the one who takes the call, and he relays that information to Red, and Red is more calm about the situation and is like, this person might be a threat. Tell General White to shoot that boy when he sees him and retrieve his ball. And call Colonel Silver to summon him up here. Like, he handles it a lot more coolly, with the anger just simmering under him. And he doesn't just, like, lose his shit and start freaking out of, like, no, I'm losing control of this situation. We gotta get that back. He doesn't have that, like, furious desperation that characterizes a more ineffectual leader in the manga, as opposed in the anime, where, again, the characterization shifted that has poised the Red Armor is more of a threatening organization and Red more as a formidable, dangerous leader.
Mm-hmm. No, for sure. I definitely agree. But, yeah, I mean, I'm trying to think. I don't know if I actually really have a lot else to say about episode 33 other than the fact that I think this episode suffers from the same problems we brought up with episode 29 in particular, where it really feels like they don't have enough material to actually fill out this episode. So because of that, it kind of feels like this episode doesn't really have like a real focus. And it's just kind of, I mean, I guess this episode is a little better than 29, where it's like episode 29 really did feel like just kind of a collection of scenes. Really, it didn't really feel like the story for that episode clearly couldn't fill an entire episode. But yeah, I don't know. It just doesn't really feel like episode 33 really has a point, except for the fact that, like, you know, eventually we get that bit where, like, the Red Ribbon Army starts burning down an entire forest just to get a Dragon Ball, which I think is like the highlight of the episode.
Yeah. Just another example of their ruthless cruelty. The fact that they're shooting at these poor monkeys and they're burning down their forest.
Yeah, I just remember thinking to myself, like, you know, the guys, they don't even say, okay, let's just try to sneak up. They're like little monkeys, and they just, the first reaction is to start shooting. and I just, that was just really, I mean, it's supposed to show that they're ruthless and will do anything, but like, I just found it really interesting. But like, you know, normally you just try to maybe scare the monkeys into dropping the ball and get it and leave, and that would be probably less work. But like, yeah, no, they just start shooting immediately. I mean, I will say, like, though, I mean, going back to, first of all, I'm glad that we all agree that that thing's a cat, because I thought I was going to have to, I mean,
it's clearly inspired by Goldfinger.
Yeah, yeah.
Cat. So it's like a weird monster cat, but.
And the sound it makes too, that always, mm-hmm. that's also something that's always stuck with me.
Yeah, the way it hisses at Silver, like in all the scenes in the, where, you know, Silver is meeting with Red, is like really good to show, just as an expression of the failed threat that Red is giving to Silver.
Yeah, there's a point in episode 34 in particular where, like, Silver's about to be, you know, sent out or sentenced to death or whatever, and it's, and Red's cat is just like, quack, 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 and I'm like, dude, yeah. Holy shit, get that thing away from me. I never want to see that thing. No, I hate it so much.
The cat's the one giving the orders, obviously.
That would have been a good punchline, too.
It's that one Powerpuff Girls episode, clearly.
Oh, yeah.
But, yeah, and I mean, I also like the fact that Red, like, you know, whooped the ass of all these pro boxers, but a cat gets him. That's true to life. <It's> Yeah. True. I know cat owners, and they would all agree, yep, that's how it works.
It was setting up for his eventual clowning.
Oh, yeah. You know, the most dangerous opponents are the small ones you don't expect.
All right. I mean, I can't wait for the best fight in Dragon Ball, Goku versus Cat.
I mean, you'll get that in 30 more episodes.
Oh, wait, are you seriously? I was just joking.
Well, a cat, not this cat.
Oh, okay. Well, that's not as exciting then. I mean, maybe it's good. I don't know. We'll see.
I don't remember what happens to Red's cat. I think it just stops appearing. I don't remember like a resolution to the cat necessarily.
They were probably just like, okay, let's. They just forgot about the James Bond homage at all completely.
That's probably what ended up happening as the episodes got passed around different writers or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah. But I guess the only other note I want to mention about, like, I guess this episode and those scene with the soldiers, like, attacking the monkeys, is that there's a really funny kind of flourish in the dub to the dialogue the soldiers are having. The soldiers that discovered the monkeys at the ball. Because originally, in the original version, they're just, like, talking about, like, the Dragon Ball and how it's, you know, they're looking forward to getting their hands in one and stuff like that. Kind of like, you know, not really interesting things they're saying. They didn't really need to say anything at all. And that doesn't add much. But in the dub, like, they have kind of this funny exchange between them, the two Red Ribbon Army members.
So then accounting tells me they'll have to take it out of my next paycheck. And I'm just like, wait a minute, man. The ribbon should come with the uniform free. End of discussion.
At least it didn't let him walk on you.
I like the discussion they're having of, like, apparently you have to pay to have the red ribbon.
Fucking
the red
cheap
ribbon
assholes.
Army uniform. It's not just free when you get recruited. You're expected to pay extra for it. I just like that little joke.
I bet you 100% they don't offer any kind of life health insurance.
I mean, why would we want to? I mean, I'll just kill you when you're whether you do your job right or wrong, you get killed. So, like, that's
your health insurance is that you should be competent. If you're competent,
exactly.
You won't get time.
Exactly. That's your health insurance. That's your promotion package. That's everything all in one.
One thing I'll just mention just quickly is that I very much appreciate Josh Martin's Scottish accent for Commander Red in the dub. It's very funny. And later on in the dub, he just ends up forgetting it by the end of Red's appearances, but it's very funny in these early episodes.
That's pretty funny. I didn't know that was a thing at all. I appreciate you having you on because I don't really watch enough of the dub for this show since we're watching the Japanese version. Other than the stray scene, I might be interested in. So I appreciate your perspective. So there's that.
Yeah, it's fun watching comparing both versions.
But yeah, we can just move on to episode 34, which as we mentioned earlier, does kind of eventually transition back into manga stuff as, you know, Goku eventually leaves the mommy monkey and her little baby monkey, which it's so cute how, like, Goku's trying to leave and, like, the baby monkey's pulling on his tail and the mommy monkey's trying to, like, give him food. And, like, you know this is a filler episode when Goku is sad about eating food.
Yeah, the expression he makes, too, is just kind of like, oh.
Yeah, it's like kind of like reluctant politeness of like, oh, thank you. I kind of want to get going, but I don't feel bad about, like, rejecting your gift of food. The scene with Goku and the monkeys is cute. Like, in the previous episode, too, like, all the monkeys, like, giving Goku, you know, fruit as a gift and thanks for him saving the baby monkey and the mom from the panther is also cute.
Mm-hmm. Yes, the panther that's definitely not a recolor of the saber-toothed tiger from the first episode.
Also, just one more really quick thing about 33. I like that Silver goes to the meeting with Red and he still doesn't have a shirt on. Like, I don't know, it stood out to me. Like, you would think that, I understand probably it's just the thing where it's just like, okay, he just wanted to really meet with him really fast or whatever. But I just like the fact that he's still just shirtless. He's just walks into his superior's office just like that.
Maybe he's a show-off, you never know.
I mean, maybe. I just found that hilarious, but I digress. But yeah, like, going to 34, yeah, it was just, Goku's expression just said a whole lot at that moment where, like, you know, he's trying to leave and the monkeys are like, no, stay, you know. And I liked it, and just as you just said, like, the mommy monkey offering him more food, it just had this more, like, motherly vibe, and I just really loved that, though. It was super cute. And then it starts raining, and Goku's like, okay, well, that happened. Guess I'm sticking around it after all.
Yeah, the episode's, like, really atmospheric for a while, where we just get a lot of shots of, like, it raining all over the place and everybody kind of taking a break from everything. It was a nice cool down from all of the action from the previous episode, I think.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, we eventually get back in the manga stuff where, like, Goku runs into the, like, two Red Ribbon Army schmucks or whatever trying to find the Dragon Ball. And I just love how these guys are like, oh, man, we're never going to find it. And then this kid just shows up with a dragon radar and Goku's like, oh, that was easy or whatever. It's just, honestly, if I were those guys, I'd be pissed too. Like, we spent, like, all day and all morning trying to find this thing or whatever. I really liked sort of his beatdown of the schmucks or whatever, because, like, I thought there were a lot of really cool shots, like, when one of them, like, starts shooting at Goku, and you have that moment where, like, sort of, like, all the speed lines kind of, like, take over the screen as Goku kind of, like, gets ready to, like, dodge them or whatever, and then he starts, like, gum-gum gatling one guy or whatever. I thought that was pretty good. I don't know if you guys noticed this, but after they get beat up, the blonde guy in particular, when he's trying to call for Silver, there's that shot where, like, he's, like, sitting on the side of his truck.
Yeah,
and his face, like, lifts off his head because it's the only thing about him that's animated.
Yeah, that the cell consistently between shots, so it looks like his face is popping out of his head.
That was so weird.
The rest of his head is staying in place. Yeah, that's a funny animation error.
Oh, man, that really caught me off guard at first. And then, yeah, we talked about it a lot at the beginning of the episode, but yeah, like, Goku eventually runs into Silver again, and they have their, like, for real showdown this time. And I really love it how, like, you know, obviously Goku's really upset because he Silver blasts Kintoon with a bazooka and he kills Kintoon. I'd be upset too.
You destroyed my favorite gift from the Turtle Hermit.
Yeah, I remember you watching jerk. It for the first time and I'm just like, is that it? The clown just died? You can't do that.
Goku clearly didn't get value it as much as he does another friend who gets killed later on.
Because,
like, instead of, like, you know, being so upset that he's, like, filled with rage of, like, wanting to kill the person who hurt the thing he cared about, he's like, hey, you, apologize to me. I really like that clown.
That was my ride!
Yeah.
Dude, that was my car!
Oh, man. I do love how at one point, like, Silver's trying to, like, basically interrogate him and ask him about the radar and everything. And, like, Goku just kind of, like, is like, you know what, fuck you, dude, I'm leaving. Like, he just ups and leaves. It's so funny.
I'm not
going to
tell you if you want to apologize. Bye. Like, he just walks away. You know?
And that's is simultaneously a Goku thing and not a Goku thing to do. The fact that he doesn't just, like, throw hands with him immediately until after he starts, like, and even then it's, like, kind of a thing he does just because, like, Silver's getting on his nerves by constantly trying to hit him. Like, if Silver had just said, like, not done anything, then Goku would have just left. But I love the fact that, like, yeah, he's just like, okay, no, you're annoying now. And he just tail whips him.
Yeah. He really fights back because he won't leave him alone.
Yeah, exactly.
He has no interest in fighting this guy. He only hits back because Silver keeps pestering him.
Look, I'll give Silver this. He didn't go down after that initial punch, so there's that. But getting beat by Goku's tail, that is a little pathetic. It's like you said, it is really, really cathartic. And again, because we got so much build up to him more in the manga, this honestly, it's not just funnier, but it does feel more cathartic. Like, oh man, just took him out or whatever. But yeah, and then we get to I think actually one of my favorite parts of the episode is when Goku finds a robot.
Yes, that robot was such a snarky asshole. I love it. Like, I actually tweeted about it, but like I was watching the episode like a little bit before we went to record it, and I love the robot. The robot's like, Goku's like, who are you? I'm a robot, obviously. I want to go. What do you want? I want to go over there. Then go.
See, that's like Toriyama's trademark, like, really dry humor that I really like, because that always makes me laugh. I also like eventually when they find a plane to start riding in, because obviously he doesn't have his cloud anymore. I like how at one point the robot is just like, you humans, you're always hot, you're always cold.
Yes.
Like, pick one.
Yes, I tweeted that too.
The robot ends up, his circuits get frozen, he ends up dying that way anyway. Like, he should.
Yes.
You know, it's too bad he couldn't pay attention to temperature and understand how his body was reacting. Maybe he wouldn't have broken down.
The robot was definitely my favorite character in this set. And I'm not even really, I'm not exaggerating. Like, I totally forgot about the robot until I was watching these, and then I was like, yes, I remember this guy. This guy's the best. Like, isn't it kind of cold? And then it's just like, I'm a robot, I don't get cold. Literally built different, that's what he said.
That's pretty good. And then eventually, like, you know, they crash into a very snowy area, and Goku is just frozen as shit. I love the sheen all over him. Such a great detail.
Yeah, his body is all frozen up, and his expression too is really great.
Can I just mention real quick, because we do get to see White for a little bit, the commander of that particular base. He is just a palette swap of Commander Red.
Yeah. They have the same hairstyle and everything, and like, sometimes in manga, Commander Red is colored with white hair too, so it's like they're very interchangeable. Like, really, it's just the eye patch and like Red's mustache that distinguishes their faces.
Yeah, I didn't remember what he looked like, and then the first time I saw that, I was like, come on, dude, really?
I mean, what can you expect for a guy that's voiced by Shu?
Yeah.
Oh, Commander White voice.
Yes, Tesho Genda.
Oh wow. Okay.
And by Kyle Hebert and the dub doing his best attempt at a Russian accent.
Oh, I got to start listening to this dub a little bit. we might put some clips in post.
What? There's a plane down? It's got to be the missing jet that headquarters radioed about.
Do you have a visual?
Yes, sir. It's definitely one of ours. It's in front of me, in pieces.
According to the report, there was a boy flying that plane.
There's no sign of him here, sir. Just a shattered robot.
He is out there somewhere. Find him. That boy is carrying one of the Dragon Balls.
Yes, sir. Over and out.
Whoever this kid is, he's in for a big surprise.
Yeah, but not much else, like, really happens in the episode. Obviously, like, you know, the Red Ribbon Army guys that are around, like, go to investigate, and then Goku is dragged along by a mysterious girl. Ooh, and that's how the episode ends, basically.
Mm-hmm.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but I'm pretty sure in the manga she doesn't have a name, but I guess in the anime her name's Snow?
Yeah, I don't think she is named explicitly in the manga, but her name is Snow. I do think they bring that up in the anime.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think the anime named her. I'm pretty sure I remember someone from Kanzenchu mentioning that at one point. That's the only reason I remember that.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I mean, I guess, is there anything else we want to talk about 34? I feel like we kind of front-loaded it really early on in the episode.
Yeah, I mentioned everything I think I wanted to say about the Colonel Silver stuff, the fight he has with Goku that I really liked, and also his scene being, you know, sent to death by Commander Red. But I guess my only other note about that is that I do like the line in the dub where after Goku kicks Silver for the first time, his comment is like, he kicks like a horse. Or a donkey or something. I thought it was a fun descriptive line. And I like that Red has a random painting picture of a hippo in his office.
Oh yeah, I remember like, that.
He just has a hippo photo picture, whatever it is, on his wall. And I just thought that was amusing.
Oh, you know what? I forgot to like put that down in my notes, but as soon as you said it, I was like, oh, yeah, okay, I remember that. Oh, wow. Sakaki, is there anything you want to add about 34 in particular?
I mentioned it before, but yeah, this is the part of the Red Ribbon arc that I really... Like, we're getting into the stuff that I really like about this arc. Like, the introduction of Snow and this... Yeah, the introduction of Snow and the... Basically, getting to... what is it? Muscle Tower. Okay. Yeah, so I'm definitely glad that we're finally getting here, and we're going to get some of the voice acting that we're going to get up into next. I'm looking forward to talk about. I wanted to say something this time, but I was like, no, I feel like it would just kind of get lost with what we're talking about now, so...
All right, we'll save voice actor trivia for next time.
Yes, yes. But overall, like, this was a good set of episodes, and, like... Definitely. I know I haven't said much this episode and been pulling my weight, and that's fine because I've had a good time listening to you guys like compare the manga and the anime and the dub. Like, these are all things that I haven't watched the dub in a long, long time. I watched it when it was airing, and when I got the DVDs, I've pretty much been sub only. So it's been nice to hear some of these differences. And of course, hearing, like, I know, like, obviously, with Toriyama, we all know that he's very much, you know, wham, bam, thank you, ma'am, like, when it comes like, you know, the storytelling. So it is nice to hear that Toei really hasn't changed throughout all the years with the idea, with how they expand upon things. But overall, yeah. I mean, for episode 34 itself, I don't have anything specific to say for the episode itself.
Well, how do you feel about these episodes just overall? I think Lum and I made our opinions pretty clear.
I thought they were a pretty good set. I agree. Maybe the middle episode wasn't like the best just because it did feel like just a bunch of scenes put together. But I'll admit I'm easily amused. So like the insert song pretty much like they put that on. It's like I'm a kid like whining, and then they put on the insert song, and I'm shut up for a little bit, and I don't think about it too much. But it's like listening to you guys and watching the episode again was like, yeah. I mean, I had it on kind of mute in the background. I was like, yeah, this does seem like...
I don't really have to watch this one.
Yeah, it's like Lum said, it's not even like this. The legend's interesting. So, I mean, it definitely seems like the kind of thing that they're just kind of like, yeah, we're going to do this. And Toriyama's like, yeah, I don't plan on expanding on it. Do what you want. But, yeah, I thought overall, I liked that, you know, we got more build up on Silver, and I was about to say Red. But
I know.
Why is his hair red? Make his hair silver or something. Then he'd just be buff Gintoki, wouldn't he? But yeah, like I like him having him built up and everything like that, just to be taken out by a tail whip. So this was a good set episode, and it definitely goes to show why I feel like the Red Ribbon arc is a strong arc. The fact that the writers at Toei are able to flex their storytelling muscles a bit with this, and it only sometimes, most of the time, the execution is good. There are times where it's like, not so great, but like otherwise, I think the three of us can say for the most part that we're pretty happy with the expansion that Toei made to the manga story.
Yeah, for sure.
Which is definitely saying a lot that they understood the assignment for the most part. So
Absolutely.
No, yeah, for sure. Like I said, aside from the odd episode, like I think I came into this like not having any strong feelings, and then I think listening to Lum actually made me appreciate these episodes a bit more, because I don't think I really appreciated the buildup we got with Silver in particular until we started recording, honestly. So I definitely appreciate that. I appreciate that stuff the most out of these episodes. But otherwise, yeah, I still don't like love them or anything, but I still like enjoyed most of it, you know. But I am kind of glad that we're getting back into like manga stuff, especially with Muscle Tower. There's definitely some stuff in there that I can't wait to talk about.
Yes, I those are definitely my favorite parts of this arc, like the Red Ribbon. I mean, all of Red Ribbon is good, honestly. Like, whether you're going with manga or anime, you really can't go wrong with this arc. I think it's probably one of the strongest of, like, early Dragon Ball.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, I think that about does it for the episode. I guess tune in next time, guys, as we talk about episodes 35 to 38 in particular. One of our first, well, not our first, I think our second batch of four episodes. So we'll probably have a lot to talk about next time. And I think we're going to have not just one, but two special guests. We're doing a tag team episode next time, so I'm very excited for that. We might have even mentioned our guests earlier in the show. You'll have to go back and listen. Not going to say who they are. But yeah, I guess, Lum, thank you so much for coming on, and I can't wait to have you on again next time.
Yeah, thank you for having me. Always a fun time talking Dragon Ball, and yeah, it was a really fun time talking about these episodes today.
Yeah, yeah, and I guess if you want to go ahead and plug your stuff, now's the time.
Yeah, you can find me at Lumriyasha on Twitter. It's Lumriyasha at a variety of places, be it AniList, Animation Revelation, or Letterboxd, or there's a Lumriyasha, that's where you can find me. You can also read my reviews on MangaBarriers.com. We got a lot of books coming in, a lot of reviews coming out. You can forward more in there. That's also you're going to find the podcasts I do. I'll save MangaBarriers for Colton to mention, but I also do a podcast called Lump Squad, a UFC Officer focused podcast. I do with a good friend, Andrew A.C. Yoshimura. We discuss the wonderful and Wacky World, Rumiko Takahashi's Yurusei Yatsura. We've been having a lot of fun going through with his releases of the manga and the movies now that are available streaming on Crunchyroll and on Blu-ray from Discotech. And we're very excited for the upcoming anime later this year. And we have a lot to cover on the show. We're having a lot of fun discussing the series and a lot of fun stuff planned for this year. So look forward to more episodes coming out. And you can find them on Marvels.com and on any podcast, whatever you can think of. Spotify, Stitcher, Anchor, it's likely there. And you can follow us on Twitter at @Lum_Squad and on YouTube if you just search our channel name. And if you like the art I make, the illustrations I draw for our podcasts and the animations and illustrations I make in general, you can find that on my Instagram at @SetArtworks.
All right. Sakaki, how about you?
Yes, you can find me at Kiropon, KIIROBON, on Twitter. That's my personal Twitter, and you can see my enjoying robot sass there. I actually have something to talk about there this time. but where I'm really most active, maybe a little too much so, is at WSS Talkback, where I talk about Shonen Sunday and all of the wonderful things in Shonen Sunday, including, you know, the news of the new Urusei Yatsura reboot. And there's also the blog, wsstalkback.blogspot.com, where we talk about, like, where you can find translations of interviews with editors of Sunday or reviews. And the most recent thing is a kind of a recap of 2021 Sunday-wise, which a lot of stuff happened. and of course, we're always looking for new people to write things, you know, which doesn't have to be a currently running Shonen Sunday series. Doesn't have to be a Shonen Sunday series. It could be just something from a Shogakukan magazine. And definitely, we're always looking for new people to contribute. I'm also on the podcast with our good friends, V-Lord and Marion, with a couple of them, actually. D-Slayer Podcast, the Demon Slayer Podcast, Saturday Night Shogi, @SaturdayNightShogi, which Saturday Night Shogi is basically a Shonen Sunday. It's the podcast equivalent to Weekly Shogakukan edition, so definitely check that out. We hope to bring it back soon, actually. It's been a hiatus due to holidays, but we'll be back soon. And, of course, Shaman King Podcast, which oversold Shaman King Podcast as Shaman King Pod. I'm with those, Vilor and Marion, and they're a lot of fun. We're hoping to maybe have a more sustainable schedule for them, because we were doing way too much before and we were getting burnt out, really. Like, it was really bad. Also, I write for Toonami Faithful. I should write something new. It's been a while. And yeah, that's really the places you can find me. Yeah.
All right. Please go follow both Lum and Sakaki. Do it for me. Just do it. Do it now. Stop the podcast. Do it now. Go follow them. Anyway, but you can follow me on Twitter at SniperKing323. You can also check out all my other podcasts, you know, including Manga Mavericks, One Podcast Prevails, Just a Gintama Podcast. Basically, whatever podcast I'm doing, you can find links to over at my personal blog at coltoncorner.wordpress.com. You can click on the podcast page and you'll find links to basically everything I'm doing currently, even past projects I'm not involved in anymore, as well as a lot of guest spots I've been on. I try to keep that as up to date as possible. So there is no shortage of podcasts that I'm on. So if you like listening to me for some reason, please go listen to all my other stuff. I would really appreciate it. Again, coltoncorner.wordpress.com. That's where you find all my stuff. But as for this podcast, you should follow us on Twitter at AnotherDBPod. That's where you could get the latest updates on the podcast. You should also send us an email over at AnotherDBPod@gmail.com. Do you have any thoughts on these particular episodes we covered? Any past episodes? Any future episodes? Basically, if you have any Dragon Ball thoughts at all, or, you know, you just want to send us an email, please do. We haven't gotten a lot of them just yet, but we would love to. And if you send us an email, we'll read it on the show, because we would love to hear your thoughts on Dragon Ball and the podcast. Again, that's at AnotherDBPod@gmail.com. I also just want to say a special thanks to my good friend Taylor, who you can find on Twitter at TaySamey. That's TaySamey. She was the one who provided our album art for this show in particular. It's the thing I'm kind of one of the most proud of the show. It's really good album art, and I think she does a lot of great art in general. So if you want to commission her for something, again, follow her on Twitter at TaySamey. And yeah, you should look into asking her for some art, maybe. That would be nice. Tell her I sent you. And tell her you love the art for Another Day, Another Adventure, our podcast you're listening to right now. Don't know why I worded it like that. Okay, follow TaySamey. And I guess the most important thing, if you're not already, you should definitely subscribe, rate, and review us on Apple Podcast or wherever you listen to podcasts. We're on a bunch of different platforms at this point. If you leave us a rating and a review on Apple Podcast in particular, it really helps the visibility of our show. And we just love getting feedback from you guys in general. And yeah, it would just make me happy in general. I would love to know what people think about this podcast. I would love also to get this podcast to as many new listeners as possible. But if you are subscribed to our main feeds, and this happens to be the episode of the podcast that you're caught up on, hey, guess what? You have 5 new episodes of the podcast to listen to that are exclusively available over at patreon.com/mangamavericks, where at the $3 tier in particular, if you sign up for that tier, you'll get access to 5 new episodes of this podcast that we haven't released on the main feed yet. Basically, any actual new episodes I record, I will put them up on our Patreon. And then whatever episode I haven't released on our main feed yet, I will release it. Basically, we're kind of alternating between podcasts at this point. But like I said, yeah, we have 5 new episodes on our Patreon at patreon.com/mangamavericks that you can listen to. If you just want more of this podcast. So just letting you guys know that you can go there. And yeah, I think that's going to be about it for the show. Once again, join us next time as we cover episodes 35 to 38 with 2 special guests. And yeah, I guess until next time, guys, we'll see you guys another day for another adventure.
Aha! You're no ordinary boy, are you? No matter. I'll just have to keep my eye on you. But I always get what I'm after. Now hand over that sack or prepare to die!
You don't scare me! Just try and take it!
Oh! He kicks like a donkey!